Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
All right, we're live. Welcome to the Couch GM. I'm Connor. I'm here today with two of the guys from the Marine Layer podcast, TJ Mathewson and Lyle Goldstein. So thank you both for joining me today. And do you guys want to introduce yourself, your podcast, kind of what you do?
I guess I'll go first. Yeah.
Go ahead, TJ.
I love this delay. I'm TJ. Nice to meet everyone. Connor, thanks so much for having us on. It's been a real pleasure. So Lyle and I got to start this podcast back in November. I think it was the week after the World Series. So we picked a really good time, you know, when there's been a bunch of baseball going on to start dedicating a podcast to mostly baseball. So we trudged through the off season and now we're, having a lot of fun that the season's kicked up, have a bunch of really fun content ideas. That's how we met at the ballpark. We're in the pen, looking to get some social media content. And Lyle and I are looking around. It's like, wait, I've seen that dude before on my TikTok feed. And then you walked over to us and it's like, how about that? It's a small world out here, but it's been a ton of fun. So I live down in Corvallis. My day job includes doing some broadcast work covering Oregon State for a radio station down here, which is a ton of fun. But our venture leads us into doing a little bit more Mariners stuff, which I don't get to do as much of in my day job, despite being in the Northwest. We're more focused on college. So this is my outlet for Major League Baseball, which is a blast. And it's been a ton of fun over the last, 5 months now, and looking forward to many more.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I'm Lyle. I mean, I guess you can see it right there on the screen, but yeah, we've kicked off this thing for a few months now. And TJ and I had talked about doing this for a while. I guess we finally found the time and kind of the outlook we wanted to have on this podcast. And yeah, it's been a blast so far just to kind of sit and talk Mariners once a week, get to know some other people in the community like you, Connor. It was funny. Like, I mean, it was kind of a cool thing for us because we'd been doing this podcast through the whole off season. And when we ran into you at the game, it was funny. Like, we recognized you, but you also kind of recognized us. And that was the first kind of moment for us. We're like, oh, like maybe people are actually kind of seeing our stuff, which is really cool. And now we're sitting here doing this. So yeah, it's been a blast so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's weird how things work in the algorithms because that's why it's smart to, spread or cross post across YouTube and TikTok and Instagram Reels and all these different platforms, because you don't know which platform someone's going to see you on. So I've seen you guys on TikTok, Marine Layer podcast popped up a few times. And yeah, I was doing the interview with Rooftop Mariner there. And then I noticed you guys and yeah, that's cool. So. Yeah. So no, let's get into the Mariners season. What do you guys think so far? It's been chaos the past few days, especially this Cubs series. The Garden series was crazy, but there's some positive that you can take away from it. Also some negative, depending on how you look at it. But what are your guys' thoughts on the season so far?
It's kind of funny because I don't think you could say like everything's gone right, because not a whole lot necessarily, if you think about it, has gone exactly the way they planned. And still, like, you're sitting here, excuse me, oh my goodness, still sitting here at what, 5-8, right? After a pretty bad series with the Cubs. And we were joking around before we came on. It's like, would the content have just been better if they had lost and had lost 4 in a row going into this? But I was like, well, they still did play the 3 previous games before today when, Jared Kelnick gets a 482-foot home run, but the 3 games before were pretty excruciating and exposed a couple flaws in the Mariners system and how they expect to win games this year, especially the bullpen, which is supposed to be excellent in tight games, which really hasn't been excellent in tight games. And Matt Brash has been kind of shaky over the last week, guy they kind of need to rely on this year. Most of what we could take away, though, is that it's just early in the season and those guys eventually, you would hope, would stabilize over the course of the season. I will say, though, this roster can't really sustain all that much injury and attrition, especially in the lineup. We've kind of seen it a little bit on the bottom third of the lineup. I know not everyone's bottom of the third of the lineup is good, but that spot, especially without Dylan Moore, is it's pretty tough. So I think that's just a couple of things we've seen here early, and losing Robbie Ray stinks. And we saw the bit of the drop off to Chris Flexen yesterday in game two, where it was just a disaster. It really was. So it just a quick synopsis, but overall just kind of early a little bit and still trying to evaluate what we've seen.
Shaking some of the rust off from the offseason and spring training.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess, so obviously we try to be a little bit more sane than some of the people you see on Twitter, and I'm sure you see it too, Connor. I mean, yeah. People that every loss, they want to declare the season over. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the last three games that they've lost have been any fun. In fact, they lost them in pretty all three, so that lead they blew yesterday. But maybe that paints a little bit of a bigger picture. We talked about this a little bit, TJ and I think they're just going to have to find ways to win games by 2+ runs a lot more this year, because it's almost impossible for a bullpen to be as elite, to be an elite bullpen 2 years in a row. To do it 3 years in a row is almost unheard of, because the Mariners bullpen was elite in 21 and in 22. They could still be good. They could still be a top 10 to 12 bullpen. I just don't know if you can rely on them to be a top 3 bullpen again. So then it falls more on the offense. And that's kind of what I've taken away so far.
For sure. And especially when you get Munoz going down, it sounds like it's not going to be a long-term thing, that he's just kind of taking a break with his surgery this offseason. He was slow worked through the spring, so now he's getting back to being fully healthy. So get him back, and hopefully Robbie's injury isn't too bad, and that he comes back relatively quickly, because he looked like nails this spring, and like, you know, with the velocity back up, looking like his former Cy Young self, and with that new splitter, everyone has a new splitter this year. But yeah, as you guys were talking to with injuries, the rotation especially, there was no injuries last year at all with the starting rotation, and that's very unheard of. So hopefully we can keep that somewhat limited. But yeah.
If we just dissect the bullpen, like just think about it objectively, right? For the group to be top 10, and we could take Munoz out of it because he's on the shelf right now. You're looking at it, it's like, okay, can this group be top 10 with Diego Castillo being slightly inconsistent as he is at times in his career, with Matt Brash has been, you know, shaky over the last week, right? And his stuff has kind of deteriorated a little bit, and he hasn't been that nails high leverage guy you want him to be. I mean, Paul Sewald's velocity is down a couple ticks noticeably in his outings to start this season. Maybe it's just early in the season for him, but you know, he could also be getting up there in age a little bit. And everyone else after that, Penn Murphy's walking like 25% of the batters he's faced. Matt Festa has already been sent down because he was walking over 30% of the batters he's faced. And I can keep going. I mean, Trevor Gott and Justin Topa are good, but good at, like, the that group combined, that's not like good enough for a top 10 bullpen. Right. I don't think so.
How do you guys think the potential minor leaguers might contribute to the bullpen? Because, I mean, we saw Prelander, Baroa. There's Bryce Miller, who's still in the rotation. And I'd love to see him be a starter. But there's always talk of, do you move them to the bullpen? Is that where you need them this year?
So with Bryce Miller, I always look at it like this. When Dustin May and Julio Urias came up for the Dodgers, those guys started in the bullpen. They just got them up to the big leagues because they were one of the best arms in the entire system. They found a way to get them some innings. And then when the time came, everything kind of sorted itself out and they found their way into the rotation. I feel like one way or another, that's eventually going to happen with Bryce Miller. And maybe you see the Mariners do something similar where they bring him up, start him in the bullpen. And once they're ready and once they feel like he's ready, they could slot him in. But I do wonder between Miller and Baroa who would be first, because just off – prospect-wise, you would think it would be Miller, but if you really need a reliever, I feel like Baroa would be the first guy.
Yeah, same. I did a player profile on Baroa, and one thing that stood out was, I mean, mainly he's a 2-3 pitch pitcher, max fastball, slider. He's got a changeup. Bryce Miller has, you know, 4 pitches. Also, the command with the walk rate that Baroa has, he definitely profiles more for the bullpen from what I've seen, compared to Bryce Miller, who has the better command and can go 5-6 innings. So yeah, I think Baroa, you could throw him in the bullpen tomorrow and he would be able to get guys out pretty easily. You saw him against the Padres in spring training his first time out, getting, I think, Xander Bogaerts, Nelson Cruz, and one other guy. So, yeah.
I'd be a little nervous just throwing Bro in there first. If I'm going to be honest, I honestly would rather see Miller in there. I mean, realistically, they could want Bryce Miller to continue starting and think that's better for his development, and they'd want to flip Bro over to the bullpen faster, maybe a little bit like they did with Edwin Diaz when Edwin Diaz was like a middling prospect, pretty much. I don't even think he was a top 100 guy. They flip him to the bullpen. He comes up that year, and he's all of a sudden dominant. It's just kind of a different profile than, again, with Baroa. He was like, okay, I think he started today or yesterday in Double A, and he was okay. He was just okay. But overall, like, those issues that he has in the minor leagues at the Double A level gets expedited once he gets to the big leagues. I mean, sure. Remember, like, the Mariners have probably the nastiest guy in all of baseball, and Matt Brash in their bullpen, who has average to slightly below average command and control. And it shows, like, it gets a little rocky for a guy who's already had some big league experience, let alone a guy that you're going to call up raw, who's never pitched in the big leagues, and thinking he could get some big outs for you. It's like, well, I don't know if I could guarantee that. I'd be a little nervous watching that, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they just want to get him a little bit more work in Double A first, and he's still getting stretched out as a starter right now in the minors, which makes sense. It's easier to convert him to being a reliever than it is to convert a reliever to being a starter. But I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't, once some time passes here, you know, give Baroa another few weeks, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see him up by, I'll say, June. Mid-June. I mean, again, if he's really pitching that well in Arkansas, you've seen that guys don't always need the stop in AAA anymore, especially if you're playing in the PCL. So I feel like if Baroa is really lighting it up in AA, yeah, we could see him up in the bullpen.
So who are you taking out of the bullpen then?
I guess it's tough to say right now. I mean, I don't want to go off of, you know, you don't want to make conclusions too early. But, man, I mean, I have not been very impressed with what we've seen out of Diego Castillo so far. And, you know, he's been shaky at times in past years, where he just doesn't always have great command, and he lets a lot of guys on base. He doesn't always hold runners on well. But, you know, to start this year, it's been a little worse than usual.
Yeah, but would it ever get to the point, guys, where they get rid of him? That's hard. That's hard to
see.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Diego Castillo?
Yeah. He is a guy where the new rules, like, affect him the worst. A, he doesn't work fast. B, already doesn't hold runners and control the running game, and now it's easier than ever for guys to steal bases. So it's just kind of funny how that works, where it's directly against him.
Yeah. And kind of working off that, with Marco Gonzalez and Chris Flexen both being in there, when Robbie Ray comes back, you know, how do you restructure? I know they called up, I think it was Gabe Spear who they called up. You know, a lot of people expected Flexen and Marco, or one or the other, to be moved this offseason. Does that still happen during the season to get a bat potentially?
No.
Especially
like, it has already proven how worth it was to have Flexen on the roster. It took two games. It didn't even take two games, right? For Robbie Ray to come out and go like, something's wrong, right? And good thing we have Flexen, who's already there to throw four innings out of the bullpen that first night that Robbie Ray pitched. And then after that, he's ready to go right away. So it's just, I have a really hard time thinking they're going to take him off, especially when you have two younger guys in the rotation who might hit a wall at some point and will be taking decent jumps and innings again this year for what they've done in their past.
Yeah, I think my thing too is we've always just wished and wished for the Mariners to have rotation depth like this, right? Remember in 2017 when they racked up all those injuries? Hey, even back when Drew Smyly was on the Mariners, now he never threw a pitch, but they had so many injuries that year. And I remember they were throwing guys out there who nobody even recognized. We're now... Yeah, it sucks to lose Robbie Ray, but the fact you have Flexen, who is a big league proven starter, to slot in there, I feel like they're going to hold on to those guys for now. I mean, even when Ray comes back, I feel like they just put one of those guys in the bullpen, if I had to guess, and probably move Flexen back. Yeah. Just because it's really nice to have that depth. I know Flexen didn't look great on Tuesday, but like even in 2021, when they had to throw Robert Duggar out there and use openers, like, you know, I don't know about you guys. I don't know if I want to go back to that or not.
No, for sure. And yeah, he's definitely shown the value for sure with being able to get back in there. And I mean, last year he was great. He was solid. But yeah, it's just one blow up against the Cubs, I guess. So. Let's go to hitters, I guess, or let's take a look at the lineup. Lower third of the lineup is batting. Like, let's see here. Hummels 111. He was DH today. Colton Wong was 105. JP Crawford 209. I mean, Teoscar's at 216, but you know, just getting some rust off. Kind of, what do you think the lineup looks like in the next few weeks, a month, moving forward?
Like Lyle and I have talked about this a little bit about what they're going to do with the DH. They're not going to let the DH struggle all season. They like the versatility of it now, but if it continues to struggle, I mean, you just can't continue to trot out essentially what is Tommy Listel and Cooper Hummel, especially a struggling Cooper Hummel in that spot. If it goes long, I'm willing to give Cooper Hummel a tiny bit more of a leash. He had a really good spring training. They're a little bit high on him. There's some peripherals they like. He's also pretty versatile in the field. So you kind of say, all right, I'll give him a few more at bats, but man, there's just been, I need to go back and watch some more of his at bats, but he's not making much contact, and he's definitely not making much hard contact early, which is was trouble. And even more trouble is the fact that Tommy Listel is actually getting DH reps. I know he wasn't supposed to be on the roster, but so when they roll out an opening day lineup with Tommy Listel in it, just kind of annoying, right? Like it's almost a position, you know, like needs to hit a little bit, and you know, your DHs were awful, just so awful last year. And in the name of versatility, sometimes willing to take below average offensive performance. I don't really see that. I don't see the value in that. And it could eventually come back to hurt the Mariners in terms of them lengthening their lineup. So I don't know. And then let's just start with DH. I don't need to ramble on about the other two spots in the bottom third of the lineup, and I'll let you guys talk a little bit about that.
Let me throw you a question here, Connor, because TJ and I have talked about this a bit. I'm not saying this is the right tactic, so to speak. I'm not saying this is the right approach. But just the fact that this is the solution they have for DH and for seemingly the foreseeable future, even when Dylan Moore comes back, you're probably going to see a lot of these guys still get at bats. Do you think the reason they didn't really address this position is because they're not trying to block Shohei Ohtani if they go after him next winter? Like, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it just feels like, you know, why in the world else did they not go get another bat, even on a 1-2 year deal, to try and just help deepen this lineup? Like, that's the only thing I can come up with.
I mean, like, is Michael Conforto not the like the perfect solution to that spot? Is he not? Right? He's just sitting there on the free agent market and signed a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's true.
Yeah. Their inability to get some of those guys that could have really helped. And I mean, you guys saw that they had the highest profit out of any, you know, MLB team. So they have the money. The argument that they're saving for Ohtani, and you know, they didn't sign someone to a 1-year deal in order to help get Ohtani, I don't think that's the reasoning for it. But yeah, I do question a little bit why they didn't sign one more guy or two more guys that could really make an impact versus, you know, Tom Murphy.
It's kind of hard to sign. It's just kind of hard to sign guys to get some guys here, to be honest. Like that's what it is. It's a question of roster building. Maybe the Mariners didn't think that weren't a big believer in how healthy Michael Conforto is. What was it? Shoulder surgery last year? I'm not sure, but maybe they took a look at some medicals there and like, I don't know if I'd be comfortable giving Michael Conforto 2 years. I don't think anything's a real question about saving up for Shohei. I don't think there's really any. The only way they're not blatantly saving for Shohei Ohtani is if they sign like two of the shortstops. Like, that's it. Because again, we know and they know that Shohei Ohtani essentially pays for himself with whatever contract he's going to bring and all the jersey sales and all the television dollars and all that stuff. pays for itself. So I think that that question gets thrown out the window. I'm not sure that's entirely like realistic that you tank one position for the chance
right.
at signing Shohei Ohtani.
And I don't think that's what it is either. I just think like, I wonder if that's why they didn't sign one of these bats this offseason to like a 3-year deal. Again, why they didn't sign somebody to a 1-year deal, I don't know. But that does just kind of get my brain going a little bit of, okay, is this the reason they didn't sign somebody to like a 3 or 4 year deal? Because they need that DH spot if they're serious about getting them next year. But you guys are right. Like, this is a year where they have a chance to make a run in the American League and, you know, to make a playoff run just like they did last year. They're going for it this year. Like, yeah, I don't think they're tanking a position. I do wonder if somewhere they're thinking of something.
Good question here from Alex Hunter. Just want to throw this in there, because speaking of a potential DH, when do we consider putting Colton Wong in the Sean Figgins territory? Thankfully, Colton Wong, what was the contract Figgins signed? It was like 6 years. Was the number one free agent on the market. Thankfully, Colton Wong was not the number one free agent on the market. And to be honest, I think Colton Wong's already been better than Sean Figgins.
Look up what that contract was. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, it was 4 years.
For 90?
Oh. No, it wasn't that much. Here it is. It's 4 years, $36 million, which, I mean, to be fair, back then was a lot of money for a free agent. It just doesn't seem like that much now. Look, Colton Wong has not been great so far to start, right? And that might be underselling it. What I'm buying with Colton Wong is he has been a really consistent bat for basically 3 of his last 4 full seasons. Even last year when his defense deteriorated a little bit, he was still swinging the bat well. And like, he profiles much better than somebody like Adam Frazier did. So I'm really, really hoping and more so buying that this is just a slow start and he's going to start to turn things around. But they need it quickly. And this second base position offensively has not been kind to them since they let him go.
Let's not forget that Sean Figgins was also like kind of a bad dude. So that, like, something we can say that Colton Wong is most definitely not.
Yeah.
If you want to go, I forget if it was Divish who talked a little bit about Colton Wong. Was it Lyle? Do you remember exactly who it was? Was that? Oh no, I think that was an off the record conversation that we had. Never mind. So we have heard from some people how he was, and he wasn't he, let's just say, he would fit right in from the what was that, probably the 08 to 2012 Mariners, just perfectly, right?
Yeah, right in
personality
with
right
in with Milton Bradley.
Yeah
with Colton Wong last year, he had, I mean, a 251 batting average, 15 home runs, 47 RBIs, and 17 stolen bases. And then thinking back to his days with the Cardinals, he won back-to-back gold gloves, 19 and 20. You'd think the combination of, you know, Perry Hill plus, you know, a resurgence of his Colton's defense, they could make an interesting, you know, middle infield, him and JP. But then, yeah, the question just comes down to if they can get their bats going. So
the question I propose, do you take that? Do you take Abe Toro or do you take Adam Frazier? Probably that.
yeah I agree.
Do we really need to hear Abe Toro's name like ever again?
How's he doing? I'm honestly curious.
I'm gonna look up Winker also.
I think Jesse's actually doing pretty good.
Yeah, I know.
You know, that situation for Jesse really isn't all that bad, to be honest. It's like it's a hitter's park in a division with not so great pitching and good hitters ballparks as well. Not just American Family Fields. It's also, you know, that PNC Park's a good hitters park. Great American Ballpark's a great hitters park. Obviously he knows it very well. Right. So it's not a terrible situation for him. So I wouldn't be too surprised. He actually like hits pretty well this year. And he's also probably healthier than he was last year on the Mariners.
Yeah. The best pitcher in his division, Winker doesn't have to face this year because he's on his own team.
Yeah, how about the Brandon two Woodruff best?
And Corbin Burns.
Yeah, or both those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. But, oh, actually, I don't think Toro's even in the big leagues. He didn't make the roster out of spring training, right?
He's not. You can check his AAA stuff. And he started 32 entire games at DH last year, which is just an atrocity. An absolute atrocity.
Looks like Winker's batting like 308 so far. 772 yeah. OPS in eight games.
No home runs. I wouldn't be that shocked if he has some type of bounce back year. It was just pretty clear it wasn't going to work here. I mean, here's another question for you, Connor. Have you seen some of the discourse on Twitter with people calling Teoscar just another Jesse Winker? I mean, how much of that have you had to scroll through? We've seen a lot of it.
I hate that too. I mean, he's a true impact bat. That he could be the four hitter if he really comes to it. And then what surprised me is his defense that I've seen the past week, because I saw a couple people from the, Blue Jays fandom commented on my player profile of him about how bad his defense is and he doesn't hustle and this type of stuff. But I've seen none of that. I've seen him make some plays that looked awkward just because it's a tough play. And then he's thrown out a guy at second. I've seen some really good things.
He's got some pretty good range. I mean, besides that ball he dropped, which he should have caught, and he would probably tell you he should have caught, and most coaches would stare at that on film and say, yeah, he should have caught it. He got there in time. The ball was hit his glove and he didn't catch it. But overall, like he's not Jesse Winker in the outfield. That's for sure. That's the bar. That's essentially like he had to clear like a decent bit above that, but the decent like bit of bar above that is like also a bad defender. So, and he's cleared that bar immensely, which is nice and very refreshing to see three competent outfielders in the outfield most times. I still can't believe some of the stuff Jesse Winker did this year. Like, this man would let the ball roll through his legs in the corner.
there was plays like that. Like, I remember that play in Kansas City last year with that ball in the left field corner that just had me irate. But he just like he took awful angles on the ball. Sometimes it looked like he was jogging out there, and maybe part of that was injuries. But yeah, like Teoscar, I mean, not only has he shown some decent range so far, but he's got a good arm. Like, I mean, Winker didn't have a good arm. So that's a difference right there in itself.
And to speak to this comment.
Was that Kansas City the one he got benched?
Yeah, it was after that he got benched.
Yeah, he got, yeah. God, incredible.
To speak to this comment real quick, Jesse Winker looks like he's running on stilts in left field. I mean, Jesse Winker, I looked up his percentile ranking. He's got a second percentile sprint speed. Teoscar Hernandez is 86th. So, I mean, they're not even comparable at all. Yeah.
86, that's pretty good.
And that's out of the box. That's not in the field, but still plays to both.
Yeah. Okay, while we're waiting here, we got one Twitter question, so I can pull that up here in a second. But I got to say, because I looked up Toro's minor league numbers, it's been 9 games. In Nashville, he's hitting 156 with a 458 OPS. Unbelievable.
Again. How many games did he start at DH last year? And like, how many times did you have to open your phone 3 hours before the game, see the lineup, and just say, what the bleep? Like, what is this? I think everyone in America can see this guy cannot hit the ball. And for the sake of which I think this right here shows the flaw in the ideology of having a versatile DH spot, because out of the name of versatility, you're just putting guys there because you're like, oh, we're just going to rotate guys through there. Well, it just so happens you rotate the worst player on your roster in there 32 times in a season, and you have to watch that, and it's just awful. Yeah, I remember Eskold. I do remember that interview. I remember hearing after he was, I think his exact words were like, that play has to be made. Boom, done.
Yeah, you know, you don't see Scott get outwardly mad in many interviews. There's been twice now, at least in recent memory that I can remember. It was after that game in Kansas City where Winker misplayed that ball and he was just fed up with his defense. And funny enough, just the other day after Matt Festa couldn't find the plate, he got asked about Festa and Scott didn't beat around the bush. He was like, he's not throwing strikes. It's not good enough right now. The next day he was sent down, and it's funny. You usually don't see guys sent down that quickly, especially this early in the year. Clearly they thought that Festa needs to work on his command, but I wasn't totally shocked to see the move after the way Scott responded to that question. Cause he did not seem happy with the way Festa was pitching out of relief in those first few outings. And yeah, they clearly think he has some things to work on, because yeah, Scott was not happy. And he usually isn't that mad in interviews.
And it's probably a good thing that Topa was sitting down there, and they did like what they saw from Topa in spring, which makes that decision a little bit easier. They don't see as much of a drop off there. And Topa's been pretty good. He pitched well again today, right? So that's a decision you can make. And you still expect, though, Matt Festa to come back up and contribute to your major league roster this year. But yeah, Scott's pretty mellow headed. I think that was our biggest beef with him. Lyle and I went to college together, and throughout the college, that was our thing. What was your thing with him, Lyle? You were just like, he always just like,
yeah, it just felt like, I don't know, just a little bit of a lack of flair. And now all of a sudden, over the last couple of years, it's like, as the Mariners have started to get better, I feel like his energy's just kind of picked up a little bit, which I like. I mean, I'm not saying he should get thrown out of the game all the time, but I do like that he can toe the line sometimes.
I just remember last year during April, when Julio was getting that super wide strike zone, that when he finally went out and chewed out an ump, that was awesome to see.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so then Julio got going. I think every Mariners fan wanted to do that.
Yeah. Like, please.
For real. Here, if you want me to pull
get
up
this comment, like Tan Fam up here.
I think
this
good thing
to add. Good thing to.
Yeah, we can do that, and then I'll pull up our Twitter question we got on our
that
Twitter
one.
Account. Yeah,
oh, here it is. Oh, I didn't realize I could click on these. How about that? Need another pitcher and a hitter. That's a big ask. Trade for Ohtani, and we can actually win. Okay. So I think the third part of this is okay. Here's how this Ohtani trade would go. What, two big leaguers, you would say, right? Because it's not only going to be prospects. First, to start off, the Mariners wouldn't have the prospects to trade for him, flat out. I mean, Harry Ford's your best prospect. That takes them out of the discussion instantly, unless the Angels are truly desperate to trade him. Like, you're trading big leaguers off your roster. And I would just ask anyone who's listening, or and both of you, which big leaguer are you trading off this roster?
You can't, like, yeah, especially because there's a couple things with this, right? Number one, you'd be trading an absolute haul to a team in your division who has proven incompetent of winning over the last decade. So you'd be giving them a ton of reimbursements moving forward. Number two, it's for half a year of Shohei Ohtani, which, again, it's half a year of the best player on the planet. But if you're serious about getting him, just go sign him in the winter. Give him a blank check. I don't care what they pay him. Like, he is worth every penny. But you can't give up. Like, if I'm just going to makeshift a trade package here, like Harry Ford, Bryce Miller, I don't know. If you have to give somebody up off the big league roster, is it going to cost like Ty France and Matt Brash too? Like, if you throw those four guys in for Ohtani, like, maybe that does it. That's a lot the Mariners are giving up for half a year of Ohtani.
And I was going to say, Kelnick is probably in there also with him being in the talks for Brian Reynolds. As one of the centerpieces.
I don't think the Mariners, to this comment here, I don't think the Mariners could even trade their entire farm system and get him. Like, they could trade every single one of their top 30 prospects and I think still not land Shohei Ohtani.
And they have three of the top 30 picks this upcoming draft, but still. Yeah.
Right.
I'm dead serious. I don't think that would be enough because they don't have the blue chip guys in there anymore.
Ooh. Over under 4.5 Scott Service tosses this year.
I'd have to say under.
Has he ever had more than 4.5 in a season? I feel like it's usually like 2 or 3.
Yeah, I don't recall how many he had the past few years, but I don't remember any because it doesn't really happen. So
yeah, it's usually an extenuating circumstance that happens. Like, he's no Bobby Cox, let's put it like that.
I really hope Kelnick finishes with a higher wins above replacement than Reynolds. That would be amazing.
I'm going to let Lyle comment on this first.
Oh, yeah. So, Connor, maybe we haven't covered this.
He filled me in briefly.
Okay. Yeah. I've been a total Kelnick believer from the day we made the trade. Like I never sold the stock, any of that stuff. So Brian Reynolds is off to a good start too this year. But
yeah,
I mean, hey, to be fair, Reynolds was good last year. I think his WAR finished around about 2.5. I mean, what TJ and I talked about for what a successful year would look like for Jared as a whole, even if he puts up Cal Raleigh's exact slash line from last year, if he hits 210 and puts up a WRC plus of like 122, which is 22% above league average, even if he doesn't hit for a high average, it can still be a successful year with the power and the defense he plays. So it's tough to say for sure he's going to finish with a higher WAR than Reynolds, just because Reynolds is more proven. Although, I mean, if we want to get into Kelnick here in the next couple minutes, we can, because he's lighting the world on fire. But it's just hard to say for certain. Yeah, he's gonna do it.
And Brian Reynolds still has the advantage of playing center field too, which bumps you up a little bit in WAR.
So, and a switch hitter
off the bat. That's pretty hard. Yeah, he switch hits too. Kelnick's not gonna get quite as many at bats because Brian Reynolds is gonna play every day, and I believe Jared Kelnick for probably at least 2 months of this season, the first 2 months of the season, will not be in the starting lineup against lefties. No matter how hot he is, they're not gonna ruin him by saying, okay, yeah, sure, you're gonna start against Framber Valdez. It's like, no, there's no benefit in doing that. So he's not gonna have those at bats to have WAR, and WAR is a cumulative stat. So if you have less at bats, you know, it's less likely you might rack up as much WAR. But hey, if he plays like elite level defense, which I don't think Statcast is too high on his defense yet, but defensive numbers take a little bit to stabilize because you get fewer opportunities. The good defense might mean they're pretty close. And Lau threw out the number 2.5 last year for Brian Reynolds. I mean, successful to season this year for Jared Kelnick is 2.5. And from everything we've seen like this year already, I mean, that, like, even if he cools off a bunch, that doesn't seem like too much of an ask. A good chunk of the productive Mariners players last year were between 2 and 3 wins last year. So you'd fit right in that mark.
I guess if you go WAR over 162, it could be possible. I mean, yeah, if you just take Kelnick's numbers against righties, I mean, again, especially the way he's now playing, I'm never going to say never all of a sudden, just because he can keep anything like this up, you know, sign me right up. But to the point of he's not going to play every day, I mean, this is the whole reason they even brought AJ Pollock in, right? I mean, you guys can attest to this, but AJ Pollock's career storyline is he crushes left-handed pitching. So he was like the perfect platoon guy.
Yeah. And I would think that Kelnick would have to continue, I mean, not hitting home run every day, but continue these solid plate appearances with hard contact against these righties for the next, at least through April, until they start maybe giving him a spot start against the lefty also. But if he could become an everyday player, that makes the look of this team, you know, definitely different, because that means that he's performing how we expect him to.
You know, it's funny. I got to get this out there if we're talking about the platoon here a little bit. So I saw this on Twitter this week, again, just in the conversation of fans being a little bit off the rails. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but there's an account out there on Twitter that put out the claim that the only reason AJ Pollock was ever signed was because fans were complaining about not spending money, aka as if Jerry DePoto is just searching the Twitter web for what Mariners fans think the team should do. He's like, oh, they're mad we're not spending. Well, you know, let's cater to them and make them happy. Let's go sign AJ Pollock to a 1-year deal. Like,
that'll get the job done.
I don't think that's how it went. Like, somebody was out there.
Yeah, Jerry makes sure to get in his car every time a Seattle sports radio station has a caller segment to listen to every single one of those fans go, man, I can't stand this offense, man. We they're just being too quiet. Ugh. They're being so cheap.
Yeah. Like, again, be mad if you want about how they approach the offseason, but I can promise you the reason DePoto signed Pollock was not because, oh, I'm seeing fans complaining. Like, you know, you can script that.
It's just the training wheels for Kelnick until he can get his feet under him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think people would still be complaining if they saw what the Mariners were willing to offer for Trey Turner? I mean, I'm sure they were willing to offer a good chunk of change for Trey Turner. He just probably didn't want it, right? If we really,
I've heard that he's an East Coast guy.
We look at you know, Jerry's text messages with his agent, and you know, shot him over a couple numbers they might be interested in, like. Would people still be complaining if Jerry was like, yeah, we'll give Trey 8 for $280? No problem. Would people still be complaining? Right? Trey Turner wasn't going to come here.
Yeah. I mean, I'll throw this to you, Connor, because, yeah, it sounded like you were kind of about to say, yeah, he is an East Coast guy. It didn't really seem like he had any interest to be on the West Coast. I mean, the Padres offered him everything, and he still said no.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of what you were speaking to earlier about, you know, why didn't we just sign a free agent to a 1-year deal? Because it's hard to get guys up here. I mean, I love Seattle. I'm sure you guys love Seattle. I don't know what other people have heard about Seattle that's so bad. And I mean, it's a fun team, really young, you know, very exciting. So to convince a free agent to come to Seattle, I think is much easier now than it has been. But yeah, some people just have their preferences. Dansby Swanson, I mean, he was an Atlanta guy. I'm surprised he even left the Braves and went to the Cubs.
Yeah, part of it is the Braves probably didn't want to meet his asking price. And I'm going to also guess part of it is his wife, fiance, one of the two. I mean, she plays for the women's MLS soccer team in Chicago. So that might have played a factor too.
Yeah.
So that was probably part of it. But yeah, I mean, what you hear about free agents not wanting to come to Seattle is it's just between, you know, it's far away. The travel schedule can be really tough. I mean, the fact that the team is good now helps, because in the past, you know, the reputation was they couldn't do anything right. But that's changed a little bit now. Although you still probably have to pay to get guys here just because of there's still roadblocks with, again, traveling and some other factors too.
Yeah. And then I'm curious. I know the travel schedules have changed because now every team plays each other. So I think other teams are now traveling more. Some teams are traveling less. It's not quite even or anything, but that might help a little bit. I don't know.
It actually gets worse because of the balance schedule. Cause you take more trips to the East Coast and less trips closer to you. The Mariners travel more miles with this balance schedule, which, you know, probably means that this will take a couple of years. And then the Mariners are going to go to Major League Baseball and say, hey, like, you're screwing us over here, because all those East Coast teams have to fly west a handful more times than they normally have to. But, you know, we have to take almost every plane ride we have to get on is at least 2.5 hours, every single one. And there could be months you don't take a plane trip shorter than 4.5 hours.
Yeah, the Dodgers get to take a bus down to San Diego. That probably takes 2 hours.
And to Anaheim.
Yeah, that too. You know, if we want another question here, again, we did get one on Twitter and somebody sent one in. This is kind of a fun one. Three best Mariners jerseys of all time. Somebody wanted to know. I don't know if you guys want to rank
designs.
Them. They probably mean, you know, the color. Sure, design.
Oh, okay.
Take that how you will.
Honestly, my favorite.
Go ahead, Connor.
My favorite. So first off, I think it'd be awesome if they brought back the Trident. That's a hot take there. I don't think it's cursed like other people do, but my favorite jersey that they currently wear are the white pants and the blue top. That's my personal favorite. Then teal would be second, and then I guess the Sunday creams would be third. That's for me. But that's current.
I'll tell you what my favorite is, and they're now not even using it anymore. It's those spring training sky blues. Those were always my favorite. And I always wish they'd use them in the regular season, and they never did. Those are my favorite. After that, it's probably the teals and the Sunday creams. But maybe that's my hot take, that I love the spring training sky blues, but those were awesome. I have one of those sky blue jerseys. So, you know, sign me up for those.
I like the teal. You know, I'm just going to mess with you guys, and I'm just going to say the what were those jerseys called? They were like Turn Ahead to the Future uniforms.
Oh,
those were just awesome. Those were just amazing. And then were the throwback uniforms they wore last year? Was it the Steelheads?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Steelheads.
Now, those are awesome. They should wear those once a month. Those were clean. They were crisp. They like the color mix on there is perfect.
How do we think the City Connect jerseys are going to come out? I mean, because we have no idea what they're going to look like. It's all been guesses to this point. I feel like usually the Mariners are pretty good about designing jerseys, but like, I have no idea. I'm just kind of waiting on my toes for this one.
So we saw the leak. I think it was in the offseason. Yeah, this offseason, where it showed the Braves City Connects and then also a leak for the Mariners. And the Braves were accurate. That's what theirs actually are. The Mariners, it looks just like the Pilots, which I personally am just not a fan of. because okay. I mean, the Pilots became the Brewers.
Right.
Yeah, that's, I really wish they could incorporate the Space Needle or, you know, something Northwest versus just going back to the Pilots themed.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope they don't put like a stupid color on there. That's what I dread. I see too many, I see too many bad uniforms. They've had some shaky uniform decisions as they come along, but like, you know, some of these City Connect jerseys have been super nice. So,
and then some of them have turned out like the Red Sox ones. So I hope it's not like that.
Right. But the Red Sox ones are the blue and yellow ones.
Yeah. They look like UCLA.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about the Padres City Connects?
Oh, those are sick.
Yeah. I love those. Yeah, those are pretty sick.
It's very, very Southern California.
Are we talking about the, what do you call them? The tropical ones, like the pink, green, like those?
Pink, green, yellow. Yeah.
I like them. I thought they were really cool. I know they're a little polarizing, but yeah, I like them. I mean, I also like the Seahawks action green. So maybe I'm just a fan of the bright colors. So
I just have like PTSD thinking back to the last Players Weekend that Major League Baseball did. And they're like, okay, we have this great idea to let every team and every player be as creative as humanly possible this weekend. We're going to make all jerseys for all 30 teams either black or white.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. I wish they could customize Rob Manfred, their shoes.
Another one of your just brilliant ideas.
I wish they could customize their shoes kind of like what they did during the Players Weekends to where, you know, you could add your flair to it.
Yeah, I mean, because what were those? The Mariners did have some type of the Players Weekend jerseys, what those were, like teal and the navy blue. Like if they could somehow combine some combination of that to make the City Connect jerseys, like I feel like I'd like those. I like, and like you guys said, add something with the city to the jerseys, add the Space Needle, add Pike Place, something like that.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Go back to Colton Wong talk.
Okay. Fake name. Who is playing second? Like who's gonna play second? Who's
on first? Like, what's on second?
Yeah.
Like, tell me who's playing second base? Is Tommy Lestello? Would you rather watch Tommy Lestello over Colton Wong?
If your answer is, oh well, we should have signed Marcus Semien last year. Like, yeah, like you think everybody didn't want Marcus Semien? I mean, I wanted Marcus Semien, but this is the best option they've got. So.
Oh God. If this happened, I would revoke my fandom. I would probably, I've done this before. I've had a little bit of a self boycott of watching Mariners baseball. That would happen again.
Yeah, you want to tell people why?
No, I don't think it would be very popular in this public forum.
Well,
it did work though.
In a long story short, TJ was sick of watching Ichiro play at like 45 years old. And he's like, I'm sick of him taking at bats.
It had gotten to the point where they're putting him in to hit in crucial situations late in games against high leverage relievers, and he looked like just the most overmatched guy in the world. Like, these guys come out here and say they're trying to win games, and they're like, okay, Ichiro is gonna hit in this big spot, and you could throw him like 89 down the middle and he was missing it. Like, come
so
on.
I guess
he did retire about what, two, three weeks into my boycott. It was effective.
Yeah, exactly.
So going back to this real quick, what
Wow
do you think about
knows what comment I just watched I just looked at
oh yeah yeah
I'll we can get
no Ty, okay, so this is about Connor, is this about Ty France being the second baseman?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, that would be interesting, moving Ty to second, but that means that, like, Evan White's injured. He's obviously going to be out for a while. He hasn't performed. Who else in the minor leagues as a bat, potentially? Are we going to see Zach DeLoach anytime? I mean, you know, the outfield is log-jammed.
Ty France isn't built like a second baseman anymore.
Yeah,
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Like, he's a very different player than the guy that came over from San Diego back in 2020. Like, he's bulkier now, not in a bad way, but he's more built like a first baseman. I don't think he has the range to be playing second base much anymore. I don't even know how much third base he could be playing anymore, which is fine. He's a good first baseman. Like, we know he's good defensively over there, but it's not as simple as, oh, well, he can just slide back over to second base. There's just not that many options. Again, everybody was ready to be done with Adam Frazier after last year, which, despite the big hit against the Blue Jays, you understand. I mean, Toro wasn't the answer. Oh, I know. Yeah, I know who's sending in these questions. Like, some of Toro's underlying numbers last year through the first like month and a half actually weren't terrible. And TJ hated the sound of those words because it never came to any fruition.
I have to say,
just continued to play well or play badly.
Is Eskol the burner name?
Yeah, maybe it is.
Yeah. Okay. Then I know who's sending these questions. Who said there's only one person I know that sentence has come out, who has spoke that sentence to me in a positive manner. So,
but yeah, there's just not that many options. That's like the sturdiest option they've had since Robbie left. Just between, again, they had Toro, they had Frazier, they've had so many guys that tried to make it work. Even like Shed Long, who was a fan favorite, and I liked Shed Long, but he wasn't an everyday guy. So it's kind of Colton Wong or nobody at this point.
Right. Cool. Let's see here. Were there any other questions on your guys' Twitter?
I think we got that one. I don't know if there was any others. Is there anything else we haven't talked about? Honestly, I mean, we could touch on Kelenic here for a minute, because I mean, we talked about him a little bit, but we weren't. I mean, I don't know if we really broke down what this last week entailed for him, which is, again, like, he is absolutely turning into all of a sudden the prospect that everybody thought he could once be.
Yeah, and I just made a video today talking about his moonshot, and I mean, heading into 2021, he was ranked the fourth overall prospect in baseball. Julio was fifth. So Julio right now is doing what the Mariners fan base and what we expected Kelenic to be or to do. And with Julio now showing what he can do, and there's no ceiling for him, Kelenic, if he can really come to his own and perform like we expect him to, there's also no ceiling for him technically. So also, I want to gauge real quick, when do you think it'll be Julio Kelenic 1-2?
I still think,
or never.
Okay, so I think for now they'll continue to leave Kelenic around that sixth spot, just to, again, not throw too much pressure on him early. It's like, oh, you've had a little bit of a taste of success, now let's ask that much more of you. Because if you remember, they kind of mismanaged him when he came up. They asked him to hit leadoff the day of his debut, and I think that was just too much to ask of him, combined with the fact that he had not played enough minor league games, as was evident from his struggles. Now, if he's hitting like this in June, you might see a move back up. Because, again, that being said, there was a reason they hit him leadoff when he came up. It was with the idea of guys like Acuna hit leadoff, George Springer hits leadoff. I mean, there's a reason they hit Julio leadoff. That Ichiro type of leadoff hitter, you don't always see that anymore. Like, you'll see guys with pop hit toward the top of the lineup just to get him more at bats. So I still think if Kelenic pans out, they like that idea. I will say, if he's still hitting in mid-June, it doesn't even have to be this level. If he's still productively hitting and producing in mid-June, yeah, you'll see him move up in the lineup.
I think it depends on the guys in front of him, too, because it might not be he moves up in the lineup just for the sake of moving up. He would move up as a lefty to sandwich between a Suarez and a Teoscar Hernandez, probably, because that's how Scott likes constructing his lineups. That's what it would be, right? In the absolute best case scenario, you know, they slide Julio down to two, move him up to one, or they move him to two and Julio stays number one. I don't know what it would be. I don't think it gets to that this year. I don't think they would. I would be kind of surprised if Jared Kelenic's hitting second at any point this year, unless there's just so many injuries where they have no choice but to put him there. But, you know, it's something we're just going to have to see as the season goes along.
I just saw one of the spring training lineups with Julio Kelenic, and I started thinking about it. That would be pretty cool if that did happen. But Kelenic right now, he's Cal Raleigh and Kelenic are 27th and 28th respectively in barrels per barrels divided by plate appearances, the percentage. And then also Kelenic is 13th in hard hit percentage in MLB, 61% hard hit percentage, 28th in average exit velocity, 21.7% of the time he hits the ball, it's a barreled ball, and he's 18th in OPS right now. So
he's tearing the cover off the ball. I mean, yeah, he has another few good games. He could win AL Player of the Week this week. I think what's so impressive about it for me is, like, you just watch these at bats. We talked about this on the podcast we just released today. We were recapping the week that he had had. Like, everything just looks cleaner. He's so much more calm. The fact he's reading pitch shape and spin the way he is right now is pretty incredible. For my money, Emmanuel Clase right now is the best reliever in baseball. He was throwing Jared Kelnick some nasty stuff in that ninth inning of the game they lost. And this isn't the double he hit. This was the at-bat where he walked and it led to an insurance run before they lost the lead. He worked 8 pitches in that at-bat. He was spitting on sliders in the dirt. The old Jared Kelnick chases those. Like, the amount that he has fixed and improved in one offseason is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I completely agree. And speaking to that also, just his mindset, and you can tell that there's been a change mentally. Like, if you look at his interview after the game today, instead of, if you think back last year to that, you know, home run that he had, I think he was called up pretty soon before this happened, and then he hit that game winning or, you know, game tying home run late, and he just came in like tackling guys and like fired up. Today, mm-hmm. super level headed. After every time he hits home run, instead of being completely juiced, it's just another, you know, he expects it to happen. And when it happens, mm-hmm. you know, he doesn't get too high, he doesn't get too low anymore.
Yeah, and he still breaks out the smile. He broke out the smile today in the dugout, which was awesome.
It was
Jed Mueller was trying to get a smile out of him post game, and he was not really giving it. And he was like, yeah, he was as stoic as possible.
So not in the post game, but they caught some shots of him in the dugout, like with the rest of the guys, and he was smiling pretty much ear to ear there. Yeah, in that interview, he would not do it.
Yeah.
What's kind of refreshing to see is, not, like, the process is the same, but it doesn't seem like the power has really gone anywhere. The one thing you could say Jared Kelnick really added once he got to the majors is he was, like, a pretty decent home run hitter in the minors, but he's, like a legit power threat in the major leagues. Like, he has some legit power to all fields. I mean, you don't see left-hand hitters hit home runs pole to pole anymore. You don't see that. I mean, Yordan Alvarez does it, but Yordan Alvarez is a giant and, you know, a top 5 hitter in baseball. That doesn't really happen. And what we saw with Jared Kelnick against the Cubs, I mean, he goes straight out to right field, he goes left center, and then he goes, you know, 482 to dead center field. I mean, guys don't do that. They don't. It's not from the left side, especially. So the seeing that power stay with him is awesome to see. Now he needs to sustain it. 2 months. Let's check back in mid-June. I want to see what Jared Kelnick's slash line looks like in mid-June when he's, let's say he's had like a slump for a week. How is he going to respond from that? If he's, you know, has a really bad game where he goes over 4 with 4 strikeouts, how is he bouncing back from that, right? How's he doing that?
Connor, have you ever seen somebody reach the center field bleachers at Wrigley? I've never seen it.
I probably haven't watched enough Cubs games. But also, no, there was the Cubs broadcasters that were talking about it, and they don't think they've seen a ball go that far or reach that spot in the bleachers. So that tells you something.
I think Sammy Sosa has hit that roof right in front of the bleachers a couple times. But mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, that wasn't just into the bleachers. That was like 5 rows up into the center field bleachers.
That was wild.
And then also speaking to that, right before him, Teoscar Hernandez almost hit it out of the ballpark. He was like 2 rows away from being out of the stadium.
Yeah, and amazingly maybe, yeah. enough, that home run was 60 feet shorter than Jared's. 63 feet.
That's what gets lost in the fold today. I mean, if Kelnick doesn't hit the ball to the moon, we're probably sitting here talking about Teoscar and how, you know, he's been a little bit up and down through the first couple weeks, which is okay. I mean, he has enough of a profile and history to know that he's probably going to have a good year. But that ball he hit today was scorched. It just got forgot about in about 30 seconds because Kelnick, the very next at bat, you know, sent it to the bleachers in the center field. But yeah, Teoscar, that ball was a rocket.
And that was 97 out of the zone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and he got on top of it.
Yeah.
Just think about the guys who are at the top of the home run leaderboard. I think he's like, he's only behind Stanton this year. I think it was this year. I saw something. I'm going off the top of my head here. I think Stanton hit one 485. Giancarlo Stanton is 6'7", what, 260? And how big's Jared, right? Not 6'7", 260. It's just incredible. It just shows you the power he can generate with that swing.
Maybe a good way to kind of put a bow on this. There is one more good question in here if we want to take a look at it. Picking your all-time Mariners infield. That could be a fun way to kind of cap this thing, because there's some, what's funny before we start this? We did a TikTok on this in the offseason. TJ did it. And somebody had JP Crawford as their all-time Mariners shortstop. And there's all these comments, like on the original one, that was like, well, where's A-Rod? Where do you have A-Rod? It's like, well, I don't like A-Rod. I'm not putting him on there. It's like, well, who cares if you don't like him? You're going to sit here and say A-Rod was worse than JP Crawford. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you on that one.
I'd have to think on that one, to be honest.
Okay. Let's see if I can kind of spitball one here off the top of my head.
I don't need to spitball for one position. A-Rod is my shortstop.
Yeah. I mean, and Kyle Seager is probably the third baseman, right?
Yeah.
So there's two.
Would you take John Olerud?
He'd be
taking Abe Toro at second.
There you go. Yeah. Jared Kelnick in left field.
Yeah. It would be like Olerud. You could argue Tino Martinez. It'd probably be one of those two guys. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'll go with Olerud at first.
Edgar DH.
Yeah, Edgar DH. Robbie at second.
I'd probably put Robbie at second. Yeah.
It might be Cal Raleigh at catcher. I'm not going to lie.
Big dumper. I mean, he looks solid. He's great at defense and framing, and then the potential pop that he has there. He hits the ball hard.
So Cal might have slightly higher upside, like probably has a bit higher upside than like say Dan Wilson, but Dan Wilson was better than Cal Raleigh. I mean, Cal just hasn't played enough.
Okay. I was gonna say, so you mean like career as a whole?
I said Cal's upside is higher, so that's probably what you judge on. In that TikTok, I said I'd take Cal Raleigh because go look at all-time Mariners catchers, you're looking at some pretty bad players. So having Cal Raleigh there is like, well, they finally have a good catcher. Why not? I think Robbie's a slam dunk second baseman. If you get salty at Robbie because he cheated, like, so what? So did A-Rod, and he's our starting shortstop.
Yeah, look, there's guys in the Hall of Fame that juice. Like, it's just fact. Yeah, so is that our consensus here around the infield? We're going Raleigh, Olerud, Robbie.
Who's on the mound?
Ooh, now that, see, I mean, it's one of two guys, but it's a debate.
This is the question that really kicked the hornet's nest. So what I said, based on Mariners' career, I said I'd take Felix. Mariners' career. That's it. Mariners' career, I would take Felix. Now, it depends. Are we picking full careers or Mariners' career with this list?
You'd have to say Mariners probably, right? When they were on the Mariners?
Yeah, I think so. And, I mean, Mariners' career as a whole, what? Randy won one Cy Young with the M's. Felix won one Cy Young. It probably should have been two, to be honest. But, yeah, I mean, again, if you take Randy's career with the D-backs, then go right ahead. But it's just, yeah, I'm taking Felix if it's just Mariners' career as a whole, for sure.
I'd have to say King Felix.
Yeah. All right, so we've got our all-time M's infield in. Batteries, Raleigh, and Felix. Around the infield, it's Olerud, Robbie, A-Rod, Seager. It's a pretty good infield.
There we go.
Love it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think that'll do it for this one. Thank you guys for joining us today. And great conversation. If you guys are watching, make sure to go follow Marine Layer Podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, all their platforms. And we'll do this again soon.
Yeah. Connor, thanks for having us. It's a blast. I mean, I say this all the time to either people we talk to in our comments, people we see at the stadium. Like, one of the cool things about doing this, about at least for TJ and I starting this podcast, is we like talking with other Mariners fans. We like to kind of pick the brains of as many people as we can and get different opinions. And it's a whole community out there. So, you know, to find somebody like you that's doing similar stuff to what we're doing, it's been fun to do. So we appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Appreciate it, guys. We'll see you guys later.